Unpopular opinion alert here. More Americans than want to admit it have a spending problem than an income problem. Unfortunately, for many LGBTQ plus Americans, the opposite is true. Why is this and what can be done about it?
Well, you're listening to Queer Money episode number 488, and today we're diving into the incomes and earning potentials of LGBTQ plus Americans and sharing what we can do to increase our income and enhance our power. Now, on with the show.
You're listening to the Queer Money Podcast, personal finance with a rainbow twist.
Queer Money is dedicated to financial independence, financial well-being, investing knowledge, and the intersection of all things money as an LGBTQ person. With no fees or minimums and no overdraft fees, banking with Capital One is the easiest decision in the history of decisions. That's banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/bank for details. Capital One, N.A., member FDIC. So the data is a little bit all over the board, but it does seem that the general trend for incomes for LGBTQ plus Americans is heading in the positive direction, though slowly.
Yeah, exactly. I think that one of the things that we do have to take into consideration is the general population of the LGBT community. It skews a lot younger than the general population. So when we do general population versus LGBTQ population, there's probably going to be some difference in there due to just simple time in the market or time in the job market. But that doesn't tell the full picture. There's lots of other things we can talk about.
Absolutely. Our friend Spencer Watson, who joined us for episode 462 of the Queer Money Podcast, talk about why LGBTQ plus banks and credit unions and investments keep failing, is the founder and director, or executive director, I'm sorry, of the Center for LGBTQI Economic Advancement and Research. And in 2023, they did a study and found that a majority of respondents to their study, 57%, reported that their household income was less than $50,000 compared to 36% of the general population. And only 13% of LGBTQI respondents reported incomes over $100,000 compared to 34% of the general population.
You know, I wonder if some of that household information just has in part to do with the fact that there are so many queer people who live alone, right? Or claim that they are living alone. They're not in committed relationships where they're in a partnership. I think the data that we saw somewhere said that roughly only about 20% of gay men actually are in committed relationships where they are cohabitating with somebody. It's more for women, same-sex couples, but I'm curious, you know, it's much more common, especially at younger ages, for straight heteronormative relationships to be cohabitating pretty early on.
Yeah. Well, in that regard, that's where some of the glimmer of hope seems to be trending. Harvard Business Review did a study in 2017, and they reported that was the first time that gay men passed the incomes of straight men for the first time with a 10% premium. So that sounds like that was on an gay individual men basis, not necessarily a gay household or a couple basis. So in that regard, things might be headed in the positive direction. Now, there's a similar trend for lesbians, but it sounds as though that lesbian advantage, so to speak, seems to be more because lesbians are working more hours per week and then working more weeks per year than their lazy hetero counterparts.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, it's interesting. We always seem to add some qualifiers, and even MV Lee Badgett, who was on the podcast, can't remember what episode.
323.
When she came on the podcast to talk about the economic case for LGBTQ equality, one of the things that she did talk about was this whole idea of the fact that there are qualifiers for women in the workforce. Oftentimes you find that in same-sex relationships, lesbians are, there are more of them in the household that are actually working full time, or they're working more hours than their hetero, like you said, lazy heterosexual counterparts. I'm gonna blame that on you this whole episode.
Sorry, lazy heterosexual counterparts. We love you too.
But I think that there are indicators as to why these things might be the case. I mean, the same thing with the Harvard Business Review. You know, when you look at the contextual data, oftentimes it shows that gay men versus straight, cis, straight men have much more education. We spend more time getting an education. We spend more time getting higher education, going for master's degrees, PhDs. And so to a certain degree, it kind of makes sense why we would be earning more or get it going on the path to earning more, but we're putting in a heck of a lot more work to actually earn that.
Well, and MV Lee Badgett pushed back on that Harvard Review study, saying that once you hold education constant, comparing gay men with college degrees to straight men with college degrees, for example, gay men earn less, and then we pay a lot more to earn less. Yeah. You know, I think there's, I can tell you so many times when you talk to LGBTQ people, there are so many of them are always going to get more degrees.
More education is not always the
always answer. The answer. No, you know, there, Peter Thiel has that. I know he's not everybody's popular favorite gay, but mm-hmm. he's got that campaign where he's paying the people $100,000 not to go to college. Because his argument is that, especially today, going to college doesn't provide the advantage that it once did. And how many social workers do we know who have in our own lives that have master's degrees
and are earning
$60,000 a year
or less.
Yeah. So it's just like going to school getting more college education isn't going to even the income playing field.
No.
It's just, you know, and I think, you know,
I think it's buying into a storyline that is from the past. And that storyline from the past is more education will always help you make more money. And that we're starting to see, especially I think in the tech sector, we're starting to see so many kids who are 15, 16, 17 years old getting offers for six-figure jobs from tech companies before they've even gone to college. And why? Because they learned and have a skill or did something unique long before they ever got to school. So there are a lot of different ways to make money. You know, and when we did the whole episode, and I'm going to forget what her name was, when we look at individuals who are working as plumbers and
mechanics
and
construction.
Yeah. People who have those kinds of professions, oftentimes they are going to school for 6 months, a year, 18 months, getting out, making $60,000, $70,000, $80,000, and they don't have huge education costs weighing them down every month when they're having to pay for college. Yeah. They oftentimes either got that education for free because they did it as an apprentice, or they took a certificate course and along the way got on the job training during that certificate course and come out and are able to make those figures. So there's a lot of different ways to make money. It's not just more education. Yeah.
Well, that's why we've been talking about the need in this new economy to start building that wealth builder's pyramid. We can't rely on W-2 income anymore. We need to sort of diversify our income streams, especially in this economy. So more of us need to consider putting more of our money into the stock market so we can generate stock market income, start getting into real estate investing so we can earn income from that source, and then also become an entrepreneur to some degree and start earning money from that source. We just, W-2s just aren't keeping up with inflation, even if they wanted to. I don't think they want to.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they would.
No.
We wouldn't be stagnant.
Employers definitely don't want that. But I think it is important for us to think about, if you are in a situation right now where you're not looking to go back to school, if you are in a situation where you're not getting ready to go to college, are there other ways for you to make more money? And yes, there are. So let's talk about some of these. The first one we want to talk about is probably one of the most important, and that is self-advocacy. As Aretha and Annie Lennox sang,
Aretha sisters, Franklin and Annie Lennox. They're not both Lennoxes.
Sisters are doing it for themselves, and so must we. We have to. If you don't advocate for yourself, unfortunately, no one else is going to advocate. Your boss, the company you work for, nobody at the company you work for is going to advocate for you to make more money. That you have to do all for yourself. So here are three ways that you can advocate for yourself, especially when you're talking with or working with your boss. The first one is to know your worth, which basically says, I've done some research. I understand what somebody in my profession makes. And then make sure your boss is aware that you know the going rate for your position, whether that's in the company or outside the company. And probably some of the best places to gather this kind of information are websites like salary.com, glassdoor.com, payscale.com. And then also do a little digging around what the cost of living is in the city that you're living in. So for example, payscale.com and bestplaces.net can help you get an idea, right? So if you walk into your to have a conversation with your boss and you know that you basically have to make $54,000 in the city you're living in to be at the middle of the road, you know that your salary negotiations are going to start at least at $54,000, if not higher, and tell your boss that, hey, you want me to make less money than the average person working in this city? So if that's the case, I guess I'm going to have to do less than average work.
But if you're arguing, when you do that, I think you need to know what you're worth. Yeah. You also need to make sure you're not being a little bit grandiose about what you're worth. You know,
yeah.
Are you providing that level of quality of work that you can justify getting paid that level of salary? Likely you are, but make sure you're, you know, not being a little bit delusional.
Right.
Queer Money is made possible by Capital One. Capital One believes that financial well-being includes your mental, physical, and financial health. Check out CapitalOne.com today.
The second way to advocate for yourself with your boss is to get in front of their face, right? Schedule time with your boss at least quarterly, if not monthly, so that you can discuss goals towards making more money, right? Discuss with your boss what kinds of goals you would need to achieve to get a promotion or to get a specific bonus or raise, and make sure that you get their buy-in on these goals and the financial outcomes that are attached to them, right? Don't just set goals. Ask your boss, what is the result of doing this? What do I get? You want me to do X? What do I get for doing X, right? And so make sure that you're actually in front of your boss having these kinds of conversations. But the third and probably most important piece here when it comes to negotiations with your boss is to shut the fuck up. No, I'm just kidding. Silence is golden. Be willing to let the conversation get a little uncomfortable, especially when you say to them, if you want me to do this, what do I get in return? Let them sit there and have to think about it, right? Ask them open-ended, honest questions, and then give them time to respond, and then get them to commit to that in writing. And probably one of the best ways to get them to commit to that in writing is to do a summary email to your boss about everything that you talked about and get them to confirm that in writing. Get them to confirm back that they agreed to this. And one of the easiest ways to get them to respond is to maybe throw in something that you didn't discuss, so they actually do have to respond. Maybe something that's a little on the outrageous side, so they do have to say, no, we didn't talk about that, but I agree with the other ones.
Jeez, how deceptive you are, David.
It's how I lured you in, right? No, I think it's the other way around. You're the mastermind, as Taylor Swift
would
say.
I'm the Taylor Swift of this relationship.
Right.
All right. Number two is to practice and learn the art of negotiating. This is something all the classes that people go through, it's surprising that there aren't more classes on negotiating, right, in college or in grade school or in high school. This is a skill that can go so far. And it's kind of hard because unless you're like actively looking for a job every 2 years, and some argue that you probably should, and actually interviewing, and some would argue that you probably should, this is a skill that can really dry up quickly. So learn and master the art of negotiating. There are tons of resources out there. There are podcasts about it. There are courses that are available. You can get it. There's a free course, I believe, in Coursera that we found. There are meetup groups that help with negotiating and writing resumes and updating LinkedIn profiles. And then, of course, there are books. And two of our favorite books actually came to the recommendation of our agent. One was Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss, and the other was Getting to Yes, written by Roger Fisher and William Urey. So check out those resources, absorb as much as you can. But then once you have read a book or two or watched a few videos, then practice with a friend negotiating and make sure that they're like antagonistic with you. Make it a difficult interview for it. Right. So that you've got the battle wounds before you actually go into the battle and you're ready to actually have the discussion. And then do your homework for your interviews. Don't just like show up and think you're going to be hunky-dory. Research the company that you're planning on applying for, or research the particular position that you're applying for. Find out as much as you can about what they're doing, what the recent initiatives are, where you would fit into the company or fill into that organization, and some questions you might want to be ready to be able to articulate or answer very clearly and compellingly are, why do you want to work for this company? Why do you want this job in particular? What do you see as your advantages? And what do you bring to the team that maybe somebody else cannot? Those are just a few questions. If you want to make sure you're prepared, maybe even have 10 questions prepared that you can respond to pretty quickly. And then you'll be able to, in some form or fashion, be able to piece that together to respond to whatever questions that they end up throwing your way.
Right. I would venture to say that those three questions in particular are most likely going to be questions you're going to be asked at some level of the interview process. You know, we know today it seems like there's more and more and more interviews happening. So you're probably going to be asked those. And I will tell you from personal experience, I went to a job interview, actually it was over the phone. I had a phone interview with a company that I had applied for, and I didn't do my research. I didn't know specifics about the company and about the app that they were building and hadn't looked at it. And when they asked me about it, I had nothing to say. And it was no surprise to me that after that interview, I did not get a callback. I didn't even expect a callback because I got a total F on that interview because I wasn't prepared at all.
But then likewise, be prepared with some really compelling questions to ask the interviewer or the manager. Like, why did the last person leave this particular role? What is the rate of turnover in this role or on the team? This is a two-way street. You want to make sure that you're a good fit for this team and that this team is a good fit for you. So be willing to ask them the hard questions. And I think that's something that a lot of us forget to do is actually interview the interviewee and make sure that you can reserve the right to say, hey, you're not a good enough organization or business for me. I'm going to go continue to look somewhere else.
Yeah, I think especially what those are good questions where you're doing one of those interview styles where you're being interviewed by people who would be your peers. I think that's a really great time. You know, ask them, what's it like working at this company? How many people have quit this job in the last year? Those kinds of questions are really eye-opening. And it might be kind of helpful for those people to hear you asking those kinds of questions because that kind of shows that you do want to be a team player, right?
Right.
The third thing here under negotiation is to always ask for more than what you want. Now, granted, going back to John's point, you can't be asking for multiple six figures for working at the drive-thru at a Taco Bell, right? I mean, make sure that that what you're asking for is somewhat in line or in those salary ranges based on the research that you've done. But if you start at or below that what you want, you will be taken advantage of. They will try to work you down from that number, right? And so you want to start out with more than what you want so that if you do have to make some concessions, you actually can go down to a number that you actually truly do want rather than going down below a number that you truly want. And we know that where you start your salary at, especially early on in your career, is really the launch pad to earning more money.
100%.
And this all goes back to making sure that you're doing your homework on what you are worth based on your skills, your education, your experience, and the research on what others are being paid for jobs like it. Having that kind of information is really important for you to be able to know what to start out with when you're asking.
Exactly. And then the fourth point to remember under negotiation is remember there are other variables that you can negotiate. 100% cash or income is the most important thing to focus on. So don't dismiss that to any degree. Maybe second in line there is the healthcare coverage you get. You can also negotiate your healthcare coverage. Other things you can negotiate are severance, time off, work flexibility, the ability to work from home, what have you. Definitely check out Queer Money Podcast episode number 432. We interviewed Dividend Dream and she talked about how she was able to climb up the corporate ladder relatively quickly and how it was a combination of her negotiation skills and willingness to bounce around every couple of years that helped her increase her income exponentially year over year. And there were points where because she negotiated her severance package while she was interviewing for the actual job, there were times when she was actually getting paid severance for one job while she was getting paid six figures from the new job that she has just taken. So she was getting paid double for some months during her career. I think she said it, if I remember correctly, that happened two different spells of time. Imagine the financial progress you could make if you were making double your salary a couple of times throughout your career. Yeah. I mean, that's just a monumental progress. So don't forget, you can negotiate any number of variables. Focus definitely on the income as well as maybe a little bit on the healthcare, but there are other things that you can negotiate to improve your quality of life and work life.
I wish I'd have heard that podcast years ago because I really needed that. When I got laid off from my job and got that severance, I took 5 months off. when I really shouldn't have. I should have jumped back in and I could have used that double paycheck to pay down my credit card debt. But no, instead I charged even more up.
You are so right, David.
All right. Number three, the number three thing here when it comes to trying to earn more money is to network with other LGBTQ folks in your industry. There are so many LGBTQ specific industry associations, things like Out in Finance, Lesbians Who Tech, the Gay Realtors Association, Reaching Out MBA, which is specifically for individuals working in business who have an MBA. Connect with these individuals because they're the ones who are going to be on your side. The same thing goes with connecting with other LGBTQ plus folks who are in the BRG or ERG, employee resource or business resource group at the company that you either work for or want to work for. All these people are your queer family, right? These are people who want to help us and see us succeed just as much as we want them to succeed. So these are individuals who most likely aren't going to balk when you say, okay, so how much are you getting paid for this job? Or what should I expect to get paid? Or what are the hours like? Or can I get work from home for these kinds of positions? All those are kinds of conversations that it's a lot easier to have when you have it with somebody from within the community.
Exactly. I think a lot of people in the LGBT community sort of are a little bit more introverted, it seems, and have a little bit of anxiety when they're told to network. These are all safe spaces for our community to actually network, right? Out in Finance, Out in Tech, or I'm sorry, Lesbians Who Tech, even the—
There is an Out in Tech. I think that's a UK-based organization, but there is an Out in Tech.
Bangers and Mash. LGBTQ plus BRGs or ERGs. Those are safe spaces. So actually, those are your people to get to know and become comfortable with. And those are the people that you can network with and find out what the next job opportunities are, or how you can move up in that company, or how you can bounce to a new company and move up the corporate ladder, if that's, you know, what you want in your career. So you don't have to necessarily be an extrovert. You don't have to go to all these like fancy shindigs after work. These are your resources to network. So take advantage of them. They're kind of designed for our success. So we should leverage them to the best of our ability.
And I'll just throw out there, networking events, although it is kind of fun to look at them as a way to make new friends, have drinks, and get somebody to hook up with, but that's not their purpose, right?
No.
Leave that to the bars or to the parties that you go to. If you're going to a networking event and you want somebody to be your advocate, especially if you're trying to work for that company, it's probably not a good idea to get shit-faced in front of them or hit on them. Absolutely. It's probably
a grinder and scruffer for.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Our fourth and final point here is to be willing to walk away. Your willingness to be able to walk away is your superpower. Remember that the job that you're in or the job that you're applying for, as desperately as you might need or want it, is not a marriage. Be willing to walk away. If it's a job that you need, hang on to it for as long as you can. But in the meantime, find a new job as quickly as you possibly can. The willingness to walk away, having that confidence going into the negotiating room, that's an energy or vibration that the other side of the desk can feel. And if they get that impression, they might be a little bit more willing to be amenable to your negotiation demands. So before you decide to walk away, though, make sure you have your plan B, right? Just don't quit your job.
Nobody likes getting hit on by a desperate person who wants a boyfriend or girlfriend, right?
Right.
No job interviewer wants to be in an interview with somebody who is acting desperate either.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the bar, right?
It is.
Nobody wants to date the desperate guy.
Or girl person.
Right. So nobody wants to hire the desperate person, or at least not give them the salary that they're worth. So just remember that. It can be a little bit hard to differentiate because we oftentimes really, really want the job. But if they don't really want you, then don't, you know, have a little bit of personal self-confidence and, you know, advocate for yourself. Be willing to walk away.
You're worth more. And I think one of the other things to remember here, especially for those of you who have a job right now, who want something different, please remember to don't go from one bad situation to another bad situation because you've put yourself in a desperate situation by quitting a job that you actually needed at the time, right? Spend a little time buckle down and get through it for a couple more weeks or a couple more months so you can set some money aside or be a little bit more prepared so that you can actually go out and get the job that you want and deserve and that will pay you fairly.
And this is the power of the Wealth Builders Pyramid. The more of those income streams that you can generate, the less reliant we are on the W-2s and the more we have the ability to say, this just isn't my cup of tea. I'm going to go find something else.
All right. So to recap, four things that can help you earn more money. One, learn to advocate and start advocating for yourself. Two, become a badass negotiator and get in front of your boss's face on a regular basis. Three, network, 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 and actually use it as a networking tool rather than a hookup tool. And four, be willing to say, bye. See you later, bitches. I'm out of here.
So we'll right. Be- we'll be but right back after these messages. In the market for a new ride? Capital One Auto Navigator makes car buying easier. Search for a car you love and pre-qualify for financing to see your real rate and monthly payment without impacting your credit score. Get started today. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/AutoNavigator for details.
Thank you for joining us for another episode. Get your queer money takeaway from this episode where we share how you can take a free Art of Negotiating class from the University of California in this week's newsletter and other resources that we mentioned in the episode.
Then join us this Thursday when we dive deeper into the Queer Cities series data and next Tuesday when we share the top investing terms you need to know to be a successful investor. Thank you and have a great week.
Bye.